Over the past few podcasts, I have appealed for donations to The Magic Word, and, much like public broadcasting stations, but without their rather substantial resources, implored listeners to consider being a member of the Friends of The Magic Word. I have also asked for ideas for topics and people whom you, the listener, would like to hear on this podcast. I always appreciate your ideas, comments, and suggestions, but I want to particularly recognize those who help The Magic Word with their financial support, which you can always do by making a donation via PayPal to scottwellsmagic@gmail.com. This week, I want to thank Hugh Knight, also known as Professor Hugh Deeney, who I ran into during a recent performance. He personally handed me a thank you letter along with a check, but I want to share his thoughtful expressions that were contained in the body of his note. Quote, "This Magi is truly grateful for your gift of the magic word. Free access to the minds of the most successful magicians in the industry? How awesome is that? Thanks again, Professor Hugh Deeney." So to Hugh, and to all the rest of you who share similar sentiments, I thank you. And Hugh, too. Now go out and spread the word.
Saturday, 27th of January, 1996. This is Scott Wells, and today my guest is Walter Blaney. Walter, where'd you get the name Zany?
Back in college, at my Presbyterian church, I was responsible for planning a lot of the parties, and they got to be a lot of fun and funny parties. I had an opportunity to do magic or juggling or ride my unicycle or whatever and plan other funny things. And pretty soon, I came in one night to our Sunday night party, and it said featuring magician Walter Zany Blaney. And I said, golly, and I remember the brunette girl named Marianne Bettis, and she thought of that. She was in charge of that party, and she'd asked me to do something on the show, so I did, and she thought of that name, and it stuck ever since. And of course, I misspelled the name Zany, which means funny, and I put the N-E-Y in there to match the N-E-Y of Blaney, so I misspelled Zany to fit Blaney, and a lot of people think I can't spell, I guess. But an interesting anecdote, Bill Roberts was the top writer in the Houston Press, was the newspaper here for years, and in fact Maxine Messenger was his girl Friday, so to speak, mm-hmm. And now she's the top gossip columnist, I guess you'd call her, in the Chronicle. But anyway, he wrote about me off and on during the years, and so in another venue, he was writing about something else. He said somebody else had a very zany act. And he spelled it Z-A-N-E-Y. So I was doing it so much, and he got to thinking that's how it's spelled.
Well, it's supposed to be spelled.
And I wrote him a little note, and I said, gotcha. And he thought that was fun, you know. But anyway, it stuck all these years.
Well, what I want to talk with you about today is the genesis of the hoop. That there's been a lot of other things. Obviously, we could talk for hours and a half about mm-hmm. other things, and inventions and ethics and everything. But in particular, I think it's interesting to know about how the hoop had evolved, and that I'd like to know to begin with that as you were just showing me over here with the models, that you had the idea first of all of doing the ladder suspension without thinking about having a gimmick hoop of any type. So. When did you first come up with finalizing the ladder suspension and then decide you wanted to do a hoop? About what year was that?
Okay, I can tell you exactly. First of all, I got the idea of the ladder levitation, which is really a suspension, but we've changed the meaning of those words magic-wise ever since Abbott's put out the Super X suspension and called it the Super X levitation. You know,
yeah.
Levitation meant the girl went up and down. If she didn't, then it was a suspension. But we really needed a third word. Because if you took one broom away, or one chair, or one sword, it was a broom, chair, or sword suspension. What if you took both brooms away, both swords, both chairs? She's actually levitating. And in the dictionary, levitating doesn't mean going up and down particularly. And you don't want to give away the word suspension. That's almost giving it away. She's suspended out from the other ladder, or board, or sword.
Uh-huh.
But at any rate, nevertheless, I tried to call mine the Zany Blaney anti-gravity board, and it just didn't stick, and everybody called it, because of the alliteration of the L's, the Zany Blaney ladder levitation. So I gave up, and that's what it's called today. But anyhow, I got the idea from another suspension that I had that I built back in college days and used about 10 years, and all of a sudden I got this wild idea, doing it one day, how to improve it. And I made that, and that became history when I invented I had a little balsa wood model, which you've seen. And I showed many friends that came to my house, and they were all fooled by it. So I knew I had a pretty good idea. And then finally, one day, I built the thing, actually 3D. And boy, the difference of floating a 2-ounce doll and a 120-pound girl was all the difference in the world. So it took a lot to make the thing ever work, and then it worked very well.
About what year?
And that was 1965 when I finally completed the real thing. A couple of years of development and starting over several times and so on. That was around 63, 64, and so on when I was building the real thing. And a lot of money, a lot of time, all wasted, and a lot of thinking on the airplanes to my shows about how to make this. And I couldn't wait to get back home and redo this and redo that. And when I finally got all but two problems, I solved those, but that created a third problem. And then I solved that, and that created a fourth problem. And it's just like there was never any end. It was never going to work, but finally it did, and it worked perfectly. And so I got it. I showed it at the Houston Association of Magicians monthly meeting down at the Bank of the Southwest, where it was, up on the 20th floor, I believe. And I did it for the guys, not knowing how good it was, and it fooled everybody. And I kind of started really kind of hiding it then. I didn't show it to everybody. And I thought I had something kind of good, but so then I got it booked at the IBM convention in Des Moines, Iowa in 1965. I think it was either July or August of 1965. And that was going to be it as far as the hoop move over it goes. I was just going to, there was no gooseneck, so I just decided to use the big old hoop move where you pass halfway over, you turn, go back to the right, turn, come back off, you know, mm-hmm. kind of passed over twice, just like you would do with a super X levitation, yeah. And so I got to thinking, I wonder if anybody's ever had a trick hoop. Well, I wish I could just pass the hoop straight over the girl. Boy, that would really clinch it. And I asked
you thought about this after you already had the
book? I was already booked to go to, it was like 3 or 4 months off, and they'd heard about it. I had this new thing, and I just wanted to show it. And so they decided to book it just in a hotel show, not on the main show up there. I was going to MC and do my act on the main show in the theater. Dunninger was the star that night and all that, but I was just going to get to stick this in for 5 minutes on one of the shows in the hotel. And but anyway, during those several months in there, I got to thinking, I couldn't find anybody. I wrote dealers, nobody had a trick levitation hoop. And I got to thinking, how would you do it? Would you have a section of it flop out and back? Boy, how would you make a hinge do that? And then when you hit the bar, the AGA bar, I call it the AGA bar, any bar that goes out from aboard to the rear, down behind your leg, out through the back curtain, and that's an AGA bar to me. And that's where we get the AGA levitation, where the bar goes out through the curtains and maybe has a lift on the back of the curtain, or elevator, whatever you want to call it. But anyway, nothing did that. So the other way would be to make it similar to a lady's bracelet, the little safety clasp, the little curved circle, and
yeah.
the little pin inside that swings around inside, and there's a little spring in it, and then you open it, crack it open, and then put it over the other safety hasp, and then let it close, mm-hmm. and that's your little safety thing. And that would be the other way to make it. And I decided to go that route. And I went to a huge City Square Bar company that was Metal Crafters. It was the Offenhauser Company.
And this was still prior to the IBM?
This was before. Offenhauser, big company. And I went
where
there
is this located?
In Houston.
Okay.
Off the Gulf Freeway, not too far, well, several miles from where I lived. Mm-hmm. I went there, and they made all kind of stuff for NASA. They made all sort of huge stuff. They did everything in the metal crafting. And I went to them and showed them my idea about having one tube slide over another. And I think they filled, and so then I found out what kind of stainless steel, very expensive, you know, $5 a foot and so on. And in those days, even, it's very, a lot more now. But very expensive. But anyway, I bought the tubes, and they fill them full of sand and heated them up and bent them around the barrel. But then the other one has to be a tiny bit different, the larger of the two, with the thinner wall. And they put a piece of tape around the barrel and bent it around that. And lo and behold, they managed to get one to work where one would slide over the other. Because when you bend a tube, they oval, and different wall thicknesses, they oval different amounts. And the radius has to be 1,000% accurate. And it's just virtually impossible to do that. And how they did it on a drum, I'll never know, but they did it. And so they made it, and there were other problems with it and everything, and finally I got it to work. And that was my final original hoop, which I still use today. The gag is I can't afford one of the new ones. And I still use my original ladder levitation, and the gag is I can't afford one of the new ones, which I build. But the oven works perfectly, and so does my original hoop.
And so that was all built, I mean,
so that
developed
was,
and
in about 3 months.
And
oh, now it's coming right up to July, when, July or August, whenever it was that summer. And so I went up to Des Moines, and in my station wagon, my wife and I and my friend Cliff Williams went up. In fact, Gene DeGene, a good friend and a good magician, had developed his own new suspension, which was kind of a hassock that he kicked around the base. And I forget the name. What was the name of that suspension? The girl sits cross-legged, upright.
Oh, Princess.
I've forgotten the name of it. There was a name to it. He only sold a few, but he kind of revolved.
Is that like cross-legged?
Yes, the girl sits upright, cross-legged, yoga style on a hassock. You know, the square cushioned hassock, you know, and he kicks it out from around her, but it's still one corner is still kind of under her rear end.
Right.
And everything, and so he took that up in the same car, and prior to just before that, I didn't know he was working on a suspension, and he didn't know I was. We were both going up in the same car, and friends and everything, and going to show off our wares, you know. And bless his heart, he just by luck of the draw, he was on like a Friday night, and I was on like a Saturday night, and he was on first, and the darn stage at the hotel was like 2.5 feet high. And he did his, the Shiva levitation, that's what he called. Because the Shiva is a position in yoga, I guess, Shiva position. So it was the Shiva levitation, or suspension, or whatever. And bless his heart, he did it, and people couldn't see. The front row could see. Everybody wanted to see. They were standing up trying to watch. Everybody said, sit down, we can't see. Well, I can't see either, I don't see. And everybody wanted to see it, and they couldn't see it. And it was a shame. It's just kind of...
It's too small.
Done and over and done. Well, the stage wasn't high enough to see, to see the trick. I said, oh gosh, I've got to do this tomorrow night, and nobody's going to see it. Mm-hmm. And so I spent the next day, most of my day, going all over the hotel, trying to find to see if they had platforms, and they didn't. And finally somebody said, well, we used to have one up in the attic, essentially. And he took me up to the elevator, the freight elevator, to the attic of the hotel. And here was this old rickety foot-high platform, about 8 by 12, a couple of pieces you put together, and all the rug was rotted, and rats had eaten it, and it was ugly, but I managed to get it on the stage, you know, behind where all the acts were appearing, and we put that platform on there, and then I put my prop on that, and it was a foot higher. Now it's 3.5 feet high, and everybody could just see my trick, just sat back and watched it, and they could see it. That foot made all the difference, and I was just pure luck.
Yeah.
If I'd been on the night before, everybody said, well, I couldn't see it. What do you do? I couldn't see it. But anyway, mine took everybody by storm, fooled them. Big long ovations and all that stuff, and it was a big thrill, you know. But I had the hoop, and the hoop clinched it. It made it 10 times better than it was going to be without the hoop. It was a good trick, even if I didn't have a hoop. And everybody said so, and in fact, when I showed my little model all those years, I had a big coat hanger wire hoop, big enough to go over, you know, the girl and around her feet halfway and back to her head halfway and off, you know. And everybody knew the hoop moved, but they didn't know how the trick worked. They didn't know where the gimmick was, you know. And so the hoop just clenched it. And so the word really got out that, you know, it must be a anti-magnetic force or hot air blowing or something. There was obviously no steel or bar connections. You know, I just killed all that. And even though the girl's foot and both ladders were kicked to the side, right and left. And, oh, my gosh, that's not it. And then the hoop goes straight over. Oh, God, oh, gosh, it's very fun. And they went wild, you know. And so I got invited to all the conventions. Worldwide, I did it everywhere, including the 1970 PISM convention, and stole the convention. It really did everywhere I went. It was just I felt like I was Pavarotti taking his bow after a concert. You know, it was just a great thrill. And anyway, the hoop was part of that. And
when Oppenheim, when they had
Oppenhauser,
when they made that, did they make two of them at that time?
They made just one.
Just one. Okay.
And guess what? Continental Airlines crushed it in the box that I shipped it with. They dropped a refrigerator on or something. And luckily, it was coming back after the show, and it was crushed. Crush it, it's no good. I went back, and at great expense, I had about 7 made, except that only one worked. 6 were thrown away. I mean, they tried and they couldn't do it. They tried. I was lucky they made the first one.
Same place, Oppenheim?
Yes, and I was lucky they got one more to work after the second time. So that actually is my still original. The first one was ruined, crushed, and then the second one, I have a batch of 7. So that cost me a couple $1,000s in dollars of those days to get them to make me one more. So now I've got a lot of money in that one, and that's mine. And that's the only one there ever was all these years. And boy, I've got it jealously. Or
when was that? When was that crushed? Or when did that happen?
Within the first year or something like that. You know, when I started flying with it to conventions, because this is a layman's trick. I didn't invent it for magicians. Magicians went crazy over it, but so did their audiences.
Yeah.
And I got more money by booking my levitation when they wanted it. And I could do it in hotel ballrooms or any stage or theater. I could do it outdoors. And, you know, I could do it almost anywhere.
How did the insurance work on that? Whenever that they dropped the refrigerator on a crush, they had no idea what the value was on it.
The maximum was $200. I may have gotten $200 from Continental Airlines or something like that.
Okay.
And, you know, so that was nothing. But at any rate, I was lucky to get another one made. And so then I started, for the next 15 years or so, or even longer, I kept trying to get them made. And so I went to, just an interesting anecdote. I went up to do Tannen's Barbizon Plaza show. Barbizon Plaza Hotel had a theater that seated perhaps 800 people. And he, on a Friday and Saturday night in New York, he put on the Barbizon Plaza Magic Show, maybe six or seven acts, and that was an annual event before he started his Brown's
Jubilee.
Hotel Jubilee and everything. This was earlier. And I was on one show and did my act and my levitation, and Ricky Dunn was on, and Don Allen and John Mooring and Dick Gustafson, all real good friends. And frankly, even with the levitation, Ricky Dunn stole the show. He was so funny. In addition to his pickpocketing, he did a monologue that was hilarious, and he stole the show, really. But still, my levitation went well. And, you know, got a standing ovation, all that. Real proud of that. And so, all of a sudden, I'm backstage, and Don Allen runs over. He says, "Walter, two teenage kids are looking at your hoop." And I said, "Oh, thank goodness for telling me. But luckily, I have an ungimmicked hoop. And I make the switch after the show, just in case this would happen. Thank God I did it."
Mm-hmm.
So my gimmicked hoop went in the box, and the ungimmicked hoop was hanging on the stand. And so I just watched these boys a minute. And I said, "Hey, guys, what are you doing?" "Oh," they put the hoop back in the stand and turned, just they'd been caught, you know. And I said, "Are you young magicians?" "Yes, Mr. Wayne." I said, "One thing you got to remember, don't ever come backstage and touch anybody's prop. You're not even supposed to be backstage. How'd you get backstage?" "Well, no, we're sorry, we apologize." And they left. And you think, well, maybe they learned a lesson. No, they went to Tannen's Monday morning. John Warren, my good friend, happened to go in about 10 o'clock to Tannen's, and he saw these two boys telling somebody that came in that my hoop is not gimmicked. "We saw it, we got caught, we're in trouble," but they looked at it, and it's not gimmicked.
Yeah.
And it went ping, and it was a C-sharp, ping,
yeah.
Ping, you know. A gimmicked hoop, you're not going to get a ping out of it, you know. And so they said, "Really?" "Yeah, we looked at it. He caught us." And well, we put it back. We apologized and everything. And I said, "How sad. Had they got the gimmick tube, they'd be explaining to him how the gimmick tube
worked." Beauty of it.
And John said he just couldn't leave. He stayed for a couple of hours or more and saw 20, 30 people come in and out, in and out. And everybody that came in and said, "Hey, you want to hear something? We saw Blaney's hoop. It's not gimmicked. It's not gimmicked. We looked at, you know." And so the words began to spread from the story. "Yeah, I heard two kids got caught, you know, lifting into soup after the show, right after the show, on stage, hanging on the stand, and it's not gimmick." So the word spread that I do not use a gimmick tube. And so that went for the next 20 years or so, you know, until I advertised and sold the gimmick tube. Everybody didn't know there was a gimmick tube. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So I kind of had lucked out that day. It was a bad thing that happened, but it turned out to be a good thing. So that's a little anecdote.
But again, whenever you had those made that first time, then it cost you probably $2,000. You said.
Well, now, first of all, it's hard to say in 1965 the dollar today is worth about 1/4 what it was back then.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say $100 back then, it's $400-$500 in today's dollars.
Yeah.
So you got to think how much money that was to a magician eking out a living, making magic, and raising $3 and wife paying the bills and all that. You know, that was a lot of money. And I risked a lot of money to get all
I guess, but in talking just about dollars, you know, apples and apples here, that mm-hmm. if you're saying the Continental had given you like $200 at that time, was it $200 then? Or is it,
it was $200 in those dollars.
Okay, so then...
But my hoop had already cost, to finally get the first one made and finally go through the second batch of five or six, however it was, of only which one worked. And I'd already spent then, back then, $1,500 probably.
And of those dollars,
yeah. And you multiply that by four or five...
Yeah.
and that's $6,000 is what that hoop cost me way back then, in today's dollars, to get one that worked. And okay, the sad thing is then I started trying to get it made.
Right.
And I went to people that roll tubes and out of the Thomas Register, and I wrote, you know, 50 companies and everything that do tube bending. And most didn't even answer, but they all had a diagram and everything of what I wanted. And this was just to bend the tubes, not to make the hoop. And that, well, I don't have to do that. Just to bend two tubes and make one slide over the other 5 or 6 inches, you know. A sharp piece of one had to slide over the hoop proper.
These were companies all over the world?
Mostly in the United States. Yeah, I didn't want to go outside that. And so the four or five that wrote said they didn't think they could do it, or it would be they would do it, but they wouldn't promise, and they're not going to do it for free. If I wanted to risk it, they would try it. Everything. And one said, I can do it. So I spent $4,000 to have a bunch made, and I got all this steel at, you know, $5 a foot and everything, and I had it all shipped to the company. And finally, he says, I've got them. They're all done. So he shipped me, I forget, you know, this is hard to remember, but it was like 15 of them he shipped me. And he had ruined them all. You couldn't even budge one on the other. He lied to me, said they worked great, and I called him up, and he said, so sue me, you know. And
he had your money by then.
Yeah, he had my money before he shipped them. And so he had all, you know, like, it was like $4,500 or something just to bend them. And you couldn't, he said, well, they were fine when I sent them. He said, well, I'll never allow this to happen again. So I lost all that money. And so then later I found another one that said he could do it, and I put out $3,000.
What year was that?
Huh?
Well,
there's a 15-year period of between 1967 or 8 when I decided I better start trying to get these hoops made. And maybe one day I'll sell the levitation, you know, and the hoops. Mm-hmm. And the hoop is going to be the hard thing. But if I ever get that made, maybe I'll start building and selling the levitation. Mm-hmm. And but I didn't want to really then, but I just needed more hoops. And so, anyway, so this went on, and then I lost $3,000 another place. And again, I lost $4,000 another time. And that's about, pretty soon, I got to within about $8,000 or so that I'd lost, and I didn't have a hoop that worked. So finally, Carl Williams, who has Custom Magic on the West Coast, he had a full-time job with Lockheed or somebody like that. He was a craftsman, a metal craftsman. Really good, really nice guy. And he said, Walters, you know, I know I've heard you talk about having trouble getting that hoop made. Would you want me to try? And I said, oh, gosh, yeah, sure. He said, well, I've got a guy out here that I think can bend tubes. Let me go that far first. So I bought all the steel, and he tried it and tried it. And lo and behold, he got a couple of things that worked, where the tube slid. And then Carl, bless his heart, he worked his heart out to complete the thing and put all the other stuff in it that are necessary besides just bending the hoop and everything. And I paid Carl something, but gosh, nowhere near what, you know, what I should have. I mean, he did it at a brother-in-law price, and he was just kind of proud to have a hand in making this great piece of magical apparatus. And he got one to work. He made about three, but two of them really didn't work right. He didn't remember that, but only one was really usable. And I've still got the other two that aren't quite right, you know, but which I will never sell. But only one really was just absolutely perfect, just a gem, you know. And so that was my spare. And so then...
And that ran you about how much then?
Oh, gosh. Now, you know, it's hard to remember. I'm just trying to think. Oh, gosh. You know, I just had five or six made, of which only three halfway worked and only one was usable. And I guess another couple thousand dollars or something like that. But it was worth it because I got one that worked.
What year was that?
Oh, man, you know, that's hard to remember. This was maybe... Okay, subtract about 5 or 6 years from before 1986. That'd be around 1981, somewhere in there. Because around 81 or so, David Copperfield would give me a call almost once a year saying, Walter, you know I love the levitation. I've got an idea, a cute way of doing it. And what would it take to get you to build me one? Or let me get one built, or let me have a copy or something. I said, well, David, you know, I love your show and you and how much I respect you. You're the best we've ever had. But that's my signature trick, and I really don't want to sell it yet. And I said, okay, I understand. And a year go by, he called me again. And by now, he's really, you know, Mr. Big in the business. I mean, he's growing and just a super, maybe all-time greatest magician ever and a better friend and everything. And finally, after about the fifth year or something, he called and said, any chance, any change of mind, any change of heart, please, please, you know, try to get me. And I said, well, David, you know, I'm really honored that you like it that much and really want to use it. I really am, and I've had my fun with it, and doggone it, let's do it. Let's do it. I'll set up a workshop or get Johnny gone to try to make it or what, and that didn't work out. Johnny was going to, but anyway, I decided I'll put a lot of money into my workshop, about $70,000 to build a workshop and buy all the tools, learn how to use them and everything, to build the levitation. And I said, but my problem is getting that damn hook made, David, and I don't know if I can. I'll just go on faith that I can do it. I'll go back to the guy who made this one and get Carl Williams to make some. And he said, well, what if you don't? And I said, well, then I'll say this. I'll go ahead and sell you my spare, which is actually better than my original. But I'm going to keep my original. You'll have one and I'll have one. That's all that will ever be done if I can't get them made. He said, okay. Well, then I went back to the guy that bent the tubes, that we got one to work with Carl Williams. Mm-hmm. And $4,000 to the guy in advance, you know. And here we are now up to like
86.
Up to some. Now this is going to make it like $12,000. But at least I'm going to get about 15 hoops that are going to work, you know. Hopefully. And so the guy, it took forever and ever and ever to get it, and he wouldn't finish it and everything. And so finally, he did it to me again. I mean, a different guy, but he said, they're perfect. They absolutely work perfect. They all slide. I'm shipping them to you. But send me the balance. So I sent him all, you know, a total of $4,000. I get him. Just like the first time, you couldn't even move the thing an inch. I mean, he just totally lied to me. He couldn't make them again. He made one that worked the time before, only one out of five or so that didn't work, you know. And he did it to me, and I lost that $4,000. He said, same thing, so sue me.
Was it a total of $4,000? You put two up front and then paid it to, or?
A total of $4,000. Yeah. I put two up front and then paid the balance when he finished them. And this was just the bent tubes. This was not the hoop. Carl Williams was going to have to make the hoop, and I didn't get, not one could you move. And I said, this is just mean. This is just cruel, sir. How can you do that and go to sleep at night? You know, and to tell me on the phone that they all work perfectly. Well, they worked fine when I shipped them from here. I said, no, they didn't. I mean, I'm not dumb. I mean, you couldn't even get them to move, and you just wanted your money out of it, and you ruined all the steel and everything. And I mean, I just don't see how people live with themselves and do things like this. And so I just said, I'll never get it made again. Well, then I heard of another guy in Arizona that had a big shop. And there was a guy named Hudson Grotzinger, Grotzinger, who was a nice man, amateur magician, worked for a big industrial engineering company, Hewlett-Packard, that's who he worked for, Hewlett-Packard. And he said, you know, he just wrote me a note or something. He said, you know, I'll never be able to own it or anything, but if you ever make your levitation, God, that would be the trick I'd like to own, just to show friends and have and do and everything. But anyway, I just wanted a way of telling you that I really admire you and your levitation, and that hoop is just beautiful and just a fantastic trick. So I called him up and I said, you're with Hewlett Packard. They make all kind of stuff. Do you know of anybody that could bend the tubes and all that? And he said, well, let me think about it. Maybe I or my son, who also works for Hewlett Packard. I'm retired, but maybe we'll think of somebody. So I sent him the diagram and I said, you know, don't show this just to anybody. But here's the diagram, the size, the type of steel, and everything to buy and to use. So he sent it to this guy in Arizona. And I talked to a guy in Arizona, and he said, you know, this is a thing, you know, you'd have to pay in advance, but I can do it. Yes, I can do that. Come by, and we'll talk about it and everything. And I told him all the problems and how it's hard and how to polish it before and all this and how to make the smaller size grow up to the larger size and all with the solid piece that's tapered on a lathe and bent and all the stuff involved with making the whole hoop, you know. He said, we can do it. Yeah, fine. So when I went to the West Coast in 86 and I did, I took a girlfriend along and I did the IBM convention in 86 in Long Beach. And I did all three of my illusions. And I had my levitation and everything along, a trailer with my other two illusions. And coming back, I left Highway 10 and went up 250 miles and back 250 miles, 500 extra miles of driving to this guy. He had a city square block plan. And we talked and made friends. We had dinner and everything. And then he took me to his big shop, the city square block metal crafting plant. And he showed me, look, we can make these things and we can make these things. And just every kind of metal design of engineering that you could conceive of. He could do it all, you know. He says, now let's sit down, let's talk about your hoop. And I had mine along. He says, now, regarding the bending of the tubes, now we couldn't do that. Do you have somebody that could bend the tubes? And I said, this is, I guess you mean to be funny, but I've gone through so much hell with this, that's not even a funny joke to me. Don't even scare me. Of course, I don't have anybody to bend the tubes. That's what we've been talking about on the phone and writing and all that. You can bend the tubes. He says, no. And also about polishing the thing. Do you know of a polisher that could polish this to the mirror finish? I said, that's the whole problem. Once it's bent, then you polish it, it heats up, changes the radius, and it's all ruined. It has to be polished straight. And all, you know, went on like that. And then on this thing about making the small part come up to the large size, do you have a man that could... I said, I don't understand. That is the hoop. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me you can't do any of these three things? I mean, that's what makes it hard. That's what we've talked about. That's why I grew up in here, spending the night and mm-hmm. came 500 miles. I said, I just can't believe this. And he says, well, I'm sorry that we had a misunderstanding. I said, no, there's no misunderstanding. I mean, you told me you could do all this. You knew all this, and now I'm sitting here, and you tell me you can't do any of this. And I just said, oh, man, I'm just never going to have this made, you know. And I got in the car, and I drove back home, and there wasn't going to be any. And I started to say, I've got to invent another hoop. I've got five of these suspensions that I can't sell, and there's no hoop, you know. And, well, meanwhile, in the earlier days, I got an idea of another hoop that worked a totally different way, made out of plastic, where it's weighted, and the weight pulls it open and closes and everything, and it was real swingy and bumpy and hard to make it heel back up, and I stiffened this vinyl plastic with a curved aluminum tube inside and a stiffer rod of steel inside, curved to the hoop, and I tried this, and I completed one, and it kind of barely worked, and I put it was black vinyl, and I put striping around it in silver, and I showed it to some friends, and they said, that's pretty good, and it just didn't work. But man, that was my only other idea. I couldn't get the metal hoop made. So I started experimenting in different kinds of plastics and having it formed a special way, and I finally figured this mathematical formula. And so what kind of plastic you use? And I tried this and that and everything, and nothing worked, and I kept going to this company that could put it in an oven and bake plastic into a certain mold, take straight tubes and bend it into circles. Okay, this is the second half. What have we talked about?
It's costing about $100 to throw.
Yeah, and thing. Pretty soon after about seven tries, I get the mathematical formula right to where the weight on one side is compensated and the ends go out together. And oh gosh, then I had to make the hoop and the stop and the this and that and hold the weight and then these tubes aren't perfect, and the inside diameter is not, the thickness of the wall is not the same all the way around, and then you have to shave and sand and do all the stuff and then get it back to a gleaming white, solid, sturdy hoop. But I finally got it. And then I ordered 30 and everything, and so that was the invention of my great white hoop, you know.
Mm-hmm. That was long about when 88.
There was this book, or the play called The Great White Hope, mm-hmm. so I got that in The Great White Hoop, and it's kind of cute, but...
That was about
1988? I imagine, yeah, right around in there. And so then, I've got to go, like you could ask me next, when I first put the metal hoop on the market. And I've got to go back and look at that. Later I can tell you that on the top of my head.
Okay, but you kind of gave up basically and trying to find
the metal
hoop.
Yeah, I could look at that. So when they bought a levitation, they were going to get the white plastic of the great white hoop. And then after the fact, I get a phone call from a guy in Arizona saying, sir, my name is so-and-so, and I've got a metal crafting company, and I've got a friend who's got the other big shop here, and over a cup of coffee, he took the liberty of showing me the plans of this levitation hoop that you're interested in. And I don't know if you're still interested, but I think I can make it. And he told me the troubles you've gone through, and I can understand how you don't want to take a chance of putting all the money up front to a guy that says, I think I can make it. I said, you got that right, because I'm not going to put a penny up to anybody unless they give me one that works. He says, I'll tell you what I'll do. Pretty expensive thing to set up the dies and everything involved to get one of these finished. But I'll buy the tubes. I've got all your plans. I know just what to buy and the size and everything. And I'll go through the effort of getting one to work, and I'll send it to you. And if it's what you want, If it's not what you want, you can't sell it, it doesn't work right, it's not pretty, it's not perfect, you don't owe me a dime. And I would just have had the fun of the challenge of trying it. I said, well, that sounds fair. He says, but if it does work, then you've got to buy 30 of them at this ungodly price. Mm-hmm. And I multiplied 30 times the price that he wants, and that's my life savings. And I would have to sell it for, you know, $1,800 to even amortize any of my loss over all these years. Who's going to buy a trick hoop for $1,800? You know, I said, God, I mean, but if I don't do it, there's never going to be this beautiful piece of apparatus, you know. Do I take a chance? I took a chance. With three daughters and a wife and all this, I took a chance that I'd ever sell one. Anyway, after a month or so go by, he sends me one. And I happened, Becky and my daughter Shannon happened to be in my home right then. I was divorced then, I'm sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was long divorced then, yeah. And I was, so they were there with me. And it's arrived by UPS, one hoop. And I said, girls, I'm going to open this box, and inside there's going to be this metal zany-blany hoop. And it's either going to be perfect, or I promise you, I'll never make another one. I'll never waste another dollar. And I took it out, and they just stared at me. And I looked at it, and I opened it, and I closed it. The spring or anything wasn't in it yet.
Right.
But I looked at it, and the way he made the small hoop go up to the larger size hoop to where they made it, there was a hairline crack, which I couldn't even see. I had to get it real close to see it. And it just slid, and it worked perfectly. And I started crying, because to see this emotional moment of somebody, some craftsman, cared enough to try to do this, and it was so perfect, better than my original. And they cried, and we all hugged each other. I remember Becky saying, oh, Daddy, all these years you've told me perseverance pays off, you know, and here perseverance paid off for you, and now you've got it. And it was just a big emotional moment. And I called the guy and I said, boy, speaking of magicians, you're the best magician I know today. You've done this. It's perfect. I'm sending my money. I'm taking out my life savings and I'm sending you. And I hear it for 30 of them. And the later I got 30 of them, I put the ads in Lincoln Ring and Genie. And this was before Magic Magazine, I think. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I put my ads in. And before I knew it, I'd sold all 30 of the... I saved six. To go, and I finished my levitations, and I sold the first six ladder levitations, you know, and then I saved another six, so that was 12 to go with the next six, so pretty soon I'd sold 12 ladder levitations, so then I had to buy 15 more for the next batch of ladder levitations, and of course these work with any Aga bar type levitation, so guys are buying them for the Aga levitations they already have, you know. And for example, Blackstone had this deal where he floated the maestro, the conductor of a symphony orchestra, and he wanted to buy the metal hoop. Would it work for that? And here the guy is on. There's the audience. There's the stage. The maestro's back. The conductor's back is to the audience, and he's standing on a podium platform. And in front of him was this podium, and then the orchestra's on the stage. The orchestra's facing the audience, and he played with symphony orchestras while he would do tricks. And then he did the levitation, he was going to do the levitation trick, so he had a composition of Dante's, Thurston's, and Blackstone's levitating music, all into a composite thing, what do you call it when you put several songs together?
Arrange.
Arranged.
Arranged.
There's some word that I can't think of right now, where you put several things together, and I can't think of that word right now.
Okay.
But whatever, we'll think of that. And so it was, the guy was standing on the platform and had a harness on something, and he had a gamelo or gamelo type, how do you pronounce that?
Is
it gamelo or gamelo?
Gamelo?
I've never heard, but people pronounce both. That's like Dave Vernon and Di Vernon, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, all of a sudden, as the music played, the maestro started rising up into the air about 2 feet, you know. In front of the gimmick was in the podium and his body hit it.
Yeah.
And he's standing on a little thing the size of his foot, and he slipped on, so it didn't fall. Here he's conducting the orchestra, and he's floating up into the air, straight up into the air. And I said, look, the conductor's floating while he's playing the music. And then Gabe would bring Blackstone out, my metal hoop, and he would reach up with two hands and pass straight down over the conductor's head. And just that moment, the conductor would lower his arms a moment with the baton, mm-hmm. and he'd pass right down over his arms. But he cocked it open and went right over the gimmick, you know,
yeah.
that's holding him, and then let it go back together and passed off under his feet. And when he did that, the audience would applaud. that he really is floating.
It wasn't until he passed the hoop over.
That's right. That got the applause. In other words, he just reached up, took a hoop, passed right down over the guy, and then went to the footlights and showed the middle hoop. Mm-hmm. You know, and that got all the applause. So Blackstone likes it, and many others used it with whatever levitations they already had. You know, and now I'm selling the Y hoop as well at one fifth the cost, because I make it and it's not near as expensive to make. But at any rate, then the third batch I got, the last 15, which means number 45 to 60 of the metal hoops, he doubled. Oh, first, did I tell you that he doubled his price the second go around?
No.
He said I didn't make any money. And so per unit, the price has doubled the second time. So the second 15, I had to raise the price to $21.25, and that seemed like an awful lot, but I sold those 15. And I'm not making near as much money on him now because he doubled his price, which is the majority of it. And so this last time, he doubled that price again. So it's now four times as much. And he says, I don't want to make him particularly. I have to put my best guy on it. I'm making all these huge projects, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars involved. And to stop my best man and make these things, each one is made by hand. And they're all rolled by hand, and they're polished by hand, and all that. And he gave me the song and dance. I think he found out what my price was and said, we ought to be getting three-fourths of that. And so that's about what it was. So now, see, I get it. I have to make the hoop. I have to put in the spring stop and the ball catch and just all the other kind of stuff in it. And I spend a couple days on each hoop. And then I have to advertise it. And I had to take $25,000 out of a savings thing and wonder if I'll ever sell these things. And still advertise all the loss I had for the first hoops and everything. So it's not a it's a matter of love of magic, and I don't get rich selling these hoops now. And you have to like it a lot to risk and do all that. So anyhow, I don't think anybody's going to copy my metal hoop anytime soon. But
there's no one else, I guess, then that can
make it. Mm-hmm. And even after that, then I went to two more places that were going to try to make it. And it's just a joke. And then one president of a company said, piece of cake. I said, well, when you say that, sir, we don't even have a deal. I'm walking out and I'll never see you again. When a guy thinks he can make it and says it's a piece of cake, I run as fast as I can from him because it's not a piece of cake. And then another guy says, I can make it, and I bought $600 worth of steel. This is after I got the first guy to make it, and he's raised his price. And he says, I could do it, and I could never get him to do it, because it's just going to be a small order. And finally, he calls me up, and he says, I'm trying this thing. Is something wrong with this steel? It just collapses. When I bend it, it just collapses. And so I go to his place, and I said, show me what you're doing. He was sticking it in and bending it around a curved thing, not filled with sand, not heated, nothing. And when he just bent it around, this $5, or now, $12 a foot stuff, he's just bending around, and he's just collapsed.
Sure.
And I said, I can't believe this. And you didn't just try it once and collapse. You used up my $600 worth of steel. You said you could do this, and this is your business. And you just bent. Oh, I said, so that there's nobody else that can make it. So
now, this was after you already had this other guy.
Trying to find somebody that could still make it and not charge me so much, And so there's just no way. I mean, the guy that knows that he's the only one that can make it. But I'll tell you what, the sharp piece that slides around the large piece only has to slide 6 inches, 5 inches. The gap that opens is about 5 inches, so it has to slide about 6 inches. Doesn't have to go all the way around. Well, now, when I bought it from him, without the springs and everything, that piece will slide 360 degrees around the thing. That's so impossible, it isn't even funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody should be able to make something that perfect, Mm-hmm. So all I can figure is, well, if they want it, it's $2,500. If that's too much, they don't want it, they don't have to buy it. But I've already sold six of these last 15 at $2,500, and Lance Burton bought one, and he went crazy. It's so neat, and he immediately bought one for a spare. And of course, when Copperfield found out I finally got a maid, he immediately bought one for a spare. So sure. He has two, and he has the $20,000 hoop that he got for $1,800. Copperfield, that first one, that spare, you could say that's a $18,000 or $20,000 hoop, and he got it for. Well, I sold all the other ones for $1,800, but that's all he should have. That's not his job to pay for all my losses, and so that's kind of the story of the hoop and why it's so expensive.
How much would you say, if you kind of tallied it all in your mind, that you actually had, aside from all the time and effort you put in there, what kind of money would you save?
Oh, well, I would never get paid back for all of my effort for all those 15 years.
I understand that.
I mean, that's just all. And believe you can imagine how much time and effort and shipping and buying the tubes and sending them and trying and hoping going out to with Carl Williams and all the stuff I did to get one hoop out of 15 years of work. You know, it's hard to judge in today's dollars. It'd be in the, $50,000 or $60,000 of loss, which I'll never make back. But as far as just my cash outflow, it started at $11,000 and went up to $15,000 that last time, and that's in those dollars. Today, that $15,000 would easily be, just 10 years ago, $30,000 in today's dollars of actual money out of my pocket, out of my bank account, out of my savings that is all lost. But then finally, at that price, I managed to make a few hundred dollars payback on each one, and now I've sold, I've had 60 made, of which I only have about, I've got to save six for this next batch of ladder levitations and everything, and so, I'm at least even, never for my time, at least even on the amount of money, the cash I put out, and then maybe I've made a few hundred dollars off of each one finally, but that's paying me for my time of making the hoop. I'm talking about just get those tubes back, That was the whole problem. So it didn't come easy, but I'm proud of it enough to where, for example, Sylvain, the premier illusionist in Europe, I would guess everybody would admit to, Carl, he liked my suspension 2001 more than he liked my ladder levitation, and he bought it, not because it was one-third the price, essentially, but because he's got the money, I think, but he liked it better. He liked that move where I walk all the way around, But he did want the more expensive hoop, and he did buy the more expensive hoop. And when he got the two together, he didn't write. He picked up the phone and called from Rome, or wherever he lives in Italy. He said, I just couldn't wait to call you and say this is the single finest piece of magical apparatus I've ever seen in my life. And that was what he said on the phone, And then Robert Albo has said essentially the same thing. And I've had a lot of other friends that I admire greatly in magic that have said it's just virtually it. It does what it's supposed to do. It's made perfectly. I understand. I don't see anybody could make this thing. It's just it's even beyond me how the guy actually does make it and make them so perfect, You know, he stretches the smaller tube up to the larger size on a whole other die. And it's put in there under 100 tons of pressure or something, and it's blown up. If he didn't have the outside of the die, it would explode the metal. But it's just this pressure just, boom, it blows it up to this larger size. And we probably shouldn't put all this in your article because I don't want to give away all the secrets, but I'm just telling you. And also, I made it, when he said he was going to do that, I said, well, make the first inch of it where it mates with the other end, where the wall's parallel, and then have the taper begin the next 6 inches down. So where it meets the reflection, it doesn't, I'm going to exaggerate, this is one who, you don't start the other one there. The other one is like this. So the reflection of the light, the walls are parallel where they mate. Mm-hmm. And then imperceptibly, over 6 inches, this goes down to the other size of the hoop proper. So, I can hold it just this close. If you want to see one in there, you can't see where it mates. But it opens up, where I pop it open, it opens up 90 degrees away behind the girl. Mm-hmm. So you're standing up with your hands, and your hands come together. Your hands are in view, and then you let go with one hand. It's cocked open, and your hand holds, hold it. But it opened up 5 inches down behind the girl. And then at this level, you just pass it right over. And the second it passes over the bar, you release the pressure. The whole hoop is revolving, but it's a mirror finish. You don't see the hoop revolving. The whole hoop is moving 5 inches, Mm-hmm. And this part, one quarter of it doesn't move. But you're letting it slip through your fingers as the spring pushes it around, and it's closed up, and you go off. So that's it. And I talked too long, and that's but that's essentially the story.
Thank you very much.
Long, I'm out of breath.
All right, so now we're with Walter Blaine. You got a very interesting story. You are out of breath.
I don't know if I can talk.
Tell it until you can stop.
I'll tell until I drop.
Until you drop. That's a long fall from as tall as you are. So.
But we're going to pick up all this noise. I can't even hear myself talk.
Oh, we can hear you.
I can hear you.
You've heard me before tonight. Pretend you leave early.
Well, let's see. Let me think back what year this was now. Okay. I premiered my lateral levitation at an IBM convention in Des Moines, Iowa in 1965. It goes back years before that when I built the model and finally I built the real thing and I invented the hoop and all that. And so I hooked it at IBM. I didn't even have the hoop then. But then I got the idea and I invented the hoop. Got it made just in time. And the hoop passed, I doubled the value of the levitation. So, on the way up, I had a friend named Logan Pritchett, Dr. Zuko. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
I know the name.
He was a good personal friend. Yeah. He lived in Little Rock, Arkansas. And so I go up there, and we drive up all the way to Kohler, Michigan, to Abbott's.
Right.
So we go out of the way a little bit to go to Evansville, Indiana,
yeah,
where my friend Dave Hoy lived. It was Paducah, Kentucky, where his wife lives now. But he was a robust guy, my best friend in magic, and we would laugh and have the best time and everything. And we could laugh hysterically, fall on the floor. How many friends do you have that can laugh that much, you know? So he cooked this thing up. He had a party that night, and then the next day we were going on. But he got me a front page picture on the newspaper, and I was on the radio, and on the 6 o'clock evening news in Evansville.
Yeah.
And
the first convention I went to in America, Evansville, about 72.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got my levitation out of the station wagon, set it up on the side of his swimming pool in his backyard. And he just had an inexpensive little swimming pool. And he got a cute little girl down from a block away and got on the board and everything. And he just loved it. He said, oh, God, that's good. And so and then he has a party that night with about 50 friends in his home, he and his wife, Shirley. So we're having a good time and laughing and talking and everything. And 2 minutes till 11, he says, oh, God, Walter, Logan, come. I've set you up to be interviewed. I'll interview you at the radio station. I said, oh, we've had enough publicity. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. But we don't need to do this. He said, oh, but I'm stuck. You got to come. It's booked. I'm doing this. I got to interview you. So we jump in the car, go through the red lights, trying to get to the studio in time. And just as we come in, the engineer behind the glass is saying, sit down, you're late, you know. So finally, we sit down, and so the engineer, whoever it was, says, ladies and gentlemen, we have a real surprise tonight. Our old friend Dave Hoy is back from playing a tour of the Playboy clubs around the country. And he has two surprising guests here tonight. So I'm going to turn it back to Dave Hoy, our old friend at KOYC, whatever the name of the station was. Dave, take it away. And in his deep radio voice, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your old friend Dave Hoy. It's good to be back in Evansville, my hometown. And then I do want to introduce two friends. And so then these are magician friends of mine. And he interviews Logan Pritchett for about 10 minutes or 5 minutes, whatever. It seemed like an hour. It's probably 5 minutes. And I'm thinking, boy, this is boring, you know. I got to pep this up a little bit. What am I going to say? He says, now, thank you, Logan. And now, this is my friend Walter Zany Blaney, official Texas Ambassador of Goodwill, commissioned by 6 Texas governors. And he's my friend, and he's invented this wonderful new trick, and he fools all the magicians. And Walter, let's talk about what is your favorite trick? And I said, well, I guess it's what's now called the ladder levitation. It's a board that I put on a couple of step ladders, and the lady from the audience lies down on it, and I take away the step ladders, and she miraculously just floats in the air. All that, yeah, I saw it. Walter set this up by the pool today in my backyard, and I floated a next door neighbor's daughter. And this is the most unusual, unbelievable magic trick I have ever seen, ladies and gentlemen. Walter, I don't know how you invented it, but I've heard so much about it, and now you're going up to the big International Magicians Convention to appear there with it, and you're going to knock them dead. And I said, well, I hope so, David, I hope it. He said, but I've got one question. Is it true, I've heard this is true, that you were doing it at one magic convention just the other day, and that all these people, families watching the show and everything, you took this girl and you put her on the board, and while she was on the board, you f***ed her? And I was just like, he didn't say that. No, I misheard. He couldn't have said that. And he did say that, damn it. He's drunk. No, he doesn't even drink. He doesn't do drugs. But he said it. And I'm just a nice boy, you know. I've never used that word or anything. And all of a sudden, like, we used, and everybody else, the engineer, two or three technical people, they're all dying laughing. And all of a sudden, I look around, and I said, what is going on here? All the people back in his house are all tuned in listening, you know. And then they're laughing, and finally it dawns on me that this is a hoax. It's not live, but not on the air. It was a big hoax just to fool me and Logan. And so then we go back to the house afterwards, and he plays the tape, and everybody goes crazy, you know. And so then I go to Abbott's, and I do the trick, and it went well. And then there was a party where all the fun guys are there.
Yeah.
Duke Stern, Carol Fox, Jack Pyle, all the Jerry Conklin, Senator Crandall, all the old timers that are there. And I said, hey, we're going to stop the party for a minute. We want you to listen to a short tape. And you're going to think it's really boring. And you're going to say, who the hell is Blaney? What is he doing this for? It's a dull tape. And this is boring. We're having such a good time. And we have to stop and listen to this. It really was. And so everybody hushed up. And I said, just keep listening. And don't say anything until it's over, okay?
Yeah.
And then I promise you, you'll be glad you heard it. So they listened to this dumb thing. And then, is it true that one time you were doing this at this magic convention with all the family audience there and everything, while you were floating in, you got on the board and you f***ed it? And they just broke. They fell on the floor.
So now he's trying to blackmail you.
And so then the radio, then he head back.
So then we head back and everything. And a few months go by, and Dave calls and says, Walter, are you going to be anywhere near St. Louis? Because I'm near Evansville. He says, I'm sub-hosting a television show, a morning daily show, because the host, the regular host, is taking a vacation in Hawaii. And I want some friends to come up and be on the show. Are you available this next Friday or something? I looked and said, well, Saturday I've got a show at the Muehlbach Hotel in Kansas City. I guess I could come up a day early. He said, oh, yeah, I'll treat you to a great supper, and we'll pal around, we'll have a great fun time. And what would it take to get the levitation here? And I said, well, I'm not doing it on the other show. If the station wants to pay for the air freight up and back, I won't charge anything for it, but I'll do it on the show. Oh, that would be great. So I'm watching it, I'm up in the room watching it, and he's got Miss Washington, D.C. on the show, on the Miss America pageant, and I'm going to float her in the air when the time comes. And they had dancers, and it was like a little Ed Sullivan show, you know. And the lobby is full of people, and so it's live. I know it's live. So then I go down, it's my time, and it's all set and everything, and I sit down. And during the commercial break, I lean over and said, this is not another Dave Harvey interview. He says, no, Walter, no. I'm sorry, that's funny, but I've got so much on my mind. Don't bring anything up like that, because this is, I'm worried. I've got to think even to get through this damn thing. You know, this is all these names and all the script and everything here. I'm sorry, I'm not fussing at you, but just I got to concentrate here. Oh, okay, fine. So then he starts in on me, and he interviews me, and everything is going fine. And I'm looking, the crowd is all still there. I see the monitors up there, and so he starts talking. And as he starts talking, it starts to sound kind of familiar. And I'm thinking, there's no way. He says, and I just want to know at one of these big magic conventions. I'm saying, no, it's not going to happen. We're on the monitor. We're going to go to jail. We're going to go to jail. We're going to go to prison. And he can't. He's not drunk. And all of a sudden, he gets right up to it and he says, in front of all these people at this big magician's convention, while the girl was floating in the air, you got a standing ovation. I couldn't speak. So he got me twice.
Great story. Great story. Thank you, Alder.
So I want to put that in the book I'm writing.
Oh,
my
God.
But I can't do that. So I figure I'm just going to say, and while she was floating, you F.
Yeah.
Blank.
Oh,
oh, my God.
That's a good one. Thank you.
We're saying
there we go.
$10.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's for now. Scotty out.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is David Hoy. It's nice to be back at WIKY. A couple of interesting guests dropped into my home tonight, and I thought maybe you would like to hear from them. The first gentleman I want to introduce you to is Dr. Zuko. That's his stage name. He's really known as Logan Pritchett, and he comes from Little Rock, Arkansas. I met Logan many years ago. How are you tonight, Dr. Zuko?
Thank you. Very well.
Tell me about your interest in magic, if you will, Zuko. I know you've been interested for many years.
Well, I started when I was 7. My father had a restaurant, and I entertained there. And the interest grew, and I've been very active in it ever since.
What's your favorite trick, Zuko? What would you say is your favorite illusion of all magic?
Well, I would say that the levitation of a human being.
You really believe that?
Yes.
In spite of this other guest we have tonight, you still believe that's true, is that right?
In spite of him.
Oh, very good. You know, I know another trick you do. What do you call that thing where it lights up when somebody chooses a card and they turn the dials? What's the name of that?
Well, this is called the electronic brain.
Is it funny to do?
Well, not usually.
Only when I watch it.
Only when you watch it, yes. It's really a very serious trick.
Is it? I remember that night down in Texas when we laughed and laughed and laughed. That was a lot of fun.
It was funny that night.
What are you doing now, Zuko? What brings you through Evansville, Indiana?
Well, we're on our way to Colon, Michigan, to a National Magicians Convention, mm-hmm. which opens tomorrow.
Great.
And we had to drive out of the way, but we wanted to see you and your beautiful and charming wife.
Thank you.
And so we have been enjoying our stay here very much.
Well, good, Zuko. I'm delighted that you were able to drop through here, and I want to thank you for coming and talking with us this evening. I'm sorry we don't have more time to chat. Ladies and gentlemen, this is coming to you live over WIKY in Evansville, Indiana. And the next gentleman I want to introduce you to has been on many of the top network shows around the nation. He was on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Name one.
Yeah, the Ed Sullivan Show. Just get a little closer to the mic here,
if you will.
Funny
thing happened to me on my way to the Ed Sullivan
yeah, we
Show.
We shouldn't get into that, I guess. I was in New York at the time Zany was to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. His name is Walter Blaney, really, but he calls himself Zany Blaney. And, Zany, I'll tell you, that was a bad night when they cut you on the cutting room floor on the Ed Sullivan Show.
That's right. I'm still there.
But I have enjoyed knowing you through the years. And also, I want to talk a minute about this fantastic levitation. How did you happen to work out this whole brand new method of doing the floating lady?
Well, if I'd known Dr. Zuko had it as his favorite trick, I never would have done it.
Yeah.
No, this is a wild thing. I, too, am a professional magician and fly around the country a good bit doing shows for conventions and banquets. But actually, the dream of all magicians is to do the famous levitation trick in perhaps a new way and perhaps to even fool magicians. So,
well, you've done that tonight,
well,
even.
Well, fine. Thank you.
We've been doing a levitation all day, friends, around the swimming pool and for all the friends who dropped by. How many times did you perform it today?
You better explain this
yeah.
a little further.
Yeah. How many times did you do the levitation?
Let's see. At poolside, we actually did this 4 times
That's
today.
Right. That's right, Zany. We were floating Mary Ashburn Cook, who's a fine drama student from Evansville College.
Very cute little girl. You betcha.
That's right.
And, well, actually, this is a new way of doing this famous trick. And there are perhaps some 17 ways of doing it, and maybe I've come up with the 18th way. And I did this a while back at in Des Moines, Iowa, at our Worldwide Magicians Convention.
That was the International Brotherhood of Magicians.
That's right.
Society of American Magicians, both of them met, right?
Well, no, actually, SAM was at another.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
They met in Milwaukee this year.
That's right, about 500 magicians from all over the world. And I came up to do this new trick. I'd spent about the last 4 months or prior to this summer, doing this, building it, creating it, and putting it together and coming up with this new way. And so actually in this routine there are several things that I do that you're not supposed to be able to do, as you know now.
Right. So for instance, putting a board on two ladders and then kicking the ladders out from under it, and then doing that beautiful bit about passing the hoop straight over. I've never seen it done this way.
No, it's rather new.
Well, I want to ask you a very important question about the levitation. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but when you have this girl laying up there in the air, and I heard that you did this one time out at one convention, is it true that while she was laying there in the air, you f***ed her?
Hello?